And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Do you mind if I have the water? No, there's radio stations that are like, well, you can't have water on the thing. I'm like,
you can have water on the table.
I'm sorry.
So
I don't leave home without it.
Which orca do you want to talk about first?
Well, the reason I'm here, I guess, is because of Orca, the Oral Cancer Awareness Foundation.
Yep.
Orca the band is just a vessel, if you will, to create awareness.
Okay.
And that's the whole purpose of Orca the foundation.
Okay.
So I'd probably just be playing at home by myself.
What do you play?
I play guitar.
Okay,
a little
cool.
bit.
Electric.
I have a lot of instruments. I think I enjoy playing the acoustic a little bit more if I'm if you came over to jam, it would just be me and you, and I have a couple of acoustic studios that we'd be hanging out in.
Which is harder to play? And there's a right answer.
Well?
Yeah. Yes. Which is harder to play well?
Acoustic.
Yes, that is the right answer. Now we know you are a real guitar player.
No, God, no. I had a friend say to me the other day that he plays golf, but he's not a golfer.
Right.
So
right.
I play guitar.
But you're not a guitarist.
Yeah. If I had to make a living doing it.
Right. So Orca is Oral?
The Oral Cancer Awareness Foundation.
Okay,
it's an
great
acronym.
Okay. And what got you down that road?
I have these written questions for you, John, that I can answer.
Oh, yeah. It
feels like we're not going to need that at all.
So the show.
Go ahead.
I never prep, but the reason
I dig that.
The reason I never prep is because it's actually difficult. I don't prep because if I look like I'm sound like I'm reading a question, I'm really bad at it.
I understand.
100%. I'm not an actor.
Yeah.
So I don't prep, but it makes me come off like an asshole before the show. Because what
I don't believe it.
No, true. Because what I really try to do is I try to say as little to you as I possibly can,
which you've accomplished.
Thank
completely.
You. before you get here,
I fell over you.
That's perfect. Because then I find it makes it more organic. Because the people listening don't know you either, so it flows better if I don't know.
I
promise to catch all these points.
No, no worries.
Oh, wait, do you want me to play Sweet Home Chicago? So how did Orca get going?
Well, Orca started soon after I was diagnosed with stage 4 oral cancer.
Ooh, how long ago did you find that?
June will be 18 years, June 4th, actually.
How'd you know? How did you get diagnosed?
Good question. So, being a dentist, I rarely wore a shirt and tie back in those days, but one day I was buttoning my top button before I put on my tie, and I was having trouble buttoning it, and I said, I was told not to say this, but the fact of the matter is, what popped in my head is I must be getting old and fat, like your neck gets thicker or whatever.
Yep.
Gravity, what have you.
I'm familiar with the problem. I'm familiar with the concept and the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Worse things than getting older. And P.S., I started to do a little self-exam. I started to feel around my neck just to, see what was going on, if you will, and I felt a little lump. There was some swelling just on the right side. And what I had learned a long time, 20 plus years of being a dentist, 25 years, You know, if you see something swollen or feel it, whatever, you want to make sure there's something equilateral that's on the other side, and that, you know, that's a good sign, and vice versa. So, of course, I felt a lump on one side, didn't feel a lump on the other side. You know what I said. Yeah, oh, shit.
Yep.
And P.S., I was like, well, maybe I'm draining an infection from the right side, so there's a lymph node swollen or something like that. Or it's cancer. But then I just, like, put that out of my mind because I was really living a super clean life. I was eating right. I was not smoking anymore, not doing most of the fun things that you'd worry about causing that. Hadn't had a cigarette, a drag, if you will, since June 2nd, 1983, the day I graduated dental school.
Nice.
So, yeah. So I says, it's not from that. You know, it's not cancer. So I did what any, you know, most guys would do. Like, women, you know, within 2 weeks, they'd go get it checked. I went to that river in Egypt. You may have heard of it.
Denial.
Yes. Thank you. Ba-dum-bum. And I did nothing for 6 months.
Yep.
Like most guys. Well, I don't know. Smarter guys would be smarter than that, obviously. So ultimately, it's too long a story, but...
it's a long-form show, man.
Oh, okay. We getting paid by the hour?
Definitely.
Awesome. I'll give you the long story. So I did nothing about it for 6 months.
Right.
And then I happened to be in my hygienist chair getting a cleaning, and I finally said to Dee, who I love dearly, I knew she had some experience with cancer. I was like, could you do a little exam for me? I feel a little something, you know, over here on the right side of my Adam's apple, if you will. And she did, and she gave me that look, you know.
Yep.
And she's like, well, you got to get that checked out. I was like, yeah, I will. I planned on it. You know, it's what I'm doing right now.
Right.
So she's like, no, you know what I mean. I was like, okay. So the next day at the morning huddle, if you will, she said to me, did you get that checked out? And I was like, dude, it was yesterday. Are you kidding me? And she's like, oh, I really think you should get that checked out. Anyway, this went on for a couple of days. And I still didn't go to the doctor, but I took my son, Ryan, the skateboarder, to get his wrist checked out, you know, where they check to see how tall you're going to be, because he was a little pint-sized guy. And
because you're like 8 feet tall.
Yeah, and he was like 3. So, you know, he looked like he was 6 when he was 9, which helped his skateboarding career a lot.
Okay, right.
People were like, how can that kid be doing that at 6 awesome. Years old? Well, he was 9. Anyway, I'll get to the boys. But point of story is I was just at the doctor's because of Ryan. I didn't go, like I said, most guys wouldn't. And I saw a patient of mine who was a doctor in this particular practice. And I said to her, you know, while you're here, you know, I hate to do this because patients do this all the time when they come in with their kids. And they're like, oh, could you check this out? You know. I said, could you just put your hand over here for a second? And she did, put her hand on my neck, and then she got that look that Dee had, the same look, and many of us know that look.
I know the look.
Yeah, and it was like, you know what I was thinking? So, of course, she said, how long has that been there? And I was like, a couple of months, when it was like 6.
Right.
And she's like, I want you to go get that checked out and get a CAT scan. It was a Friday. And she says, you know, we have an office right here in wherever, Fishkill or something. I was like, yeah, okay, I'll go, you know, as soon as possible, whatever. And she's like, no, I mean, we can get you in this afternoon. So, you know, the spidey sense was going off.
Sure, of course.
P.S., I was like, screw that. I'm going home. I'm going to have a weekend that I'll never forget because it could be the last fun weekend. And anyway, Monday I went to MD Imaging.
Wait, tell me about the weekend.
I can't tell you that I have to kill you.
Right? Fair enough. All right. So it was a very good weekend.
Yeah, I did everything that, you know, one shouldn't do. Because I was afraid that I was pretty sure, actually, honestly, that, you know, my life is going to change on Monday, so
yeah.
I had to put a little stop on that. Anyway, Monday I had the CAT scan, and my friend at OMD Imaging said to me, you know, afterwards he brought me up to his office, which was like the long walk. It was that movie, you know.
Yeah.
The 8 Mile, what was it? And sat me down. He says, Larry, you have, you don't have just one tumor. That's a secondary lesion, if you will. Your primary is your throat, and you have throat cancer. Hmm. And he said, I believe it's lymphoma, Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and you're going to have the worst year of your life. You're going to look a lot worse a year from now, but you're going to be playing on the beach with your kids. And I literally said to him, well, at least it's not squamous cell. Because squamous cell, when I went to dental school, was a death sentence. Mm. They said, if you see a patient in your chair for hygiene and you diagnose them, you figure out, it turns out they have squamous cell, you won't see them in 6 months. Because mm-hmm. most of those are stage four.
Right.
And I can tell you more about that later.
My wife had it.
I'm sorry?
My wife had it.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the statistics, but
when, oh, okay.
I want to hear that story. Believe me. So if you'll be so kind.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So anyway, I was told that I had Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and that I was going to be okay. At least it wasn't squamous cell. And we were convinced that, that was a really bad diagnosis in those days, without a doubt. And we were taking that off the board. That was Monday. Tuesday, I got the biopsy done. And because I knew people or whatever, I got the answer. Nowadays, it would take 2 weeks at least to get an answer.
It's always 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Everything is 2 weeks of cancer.
If you're lucky.
Everything.
And you got to call them.
Right, right.
All due respect. P.S., I got an answer on Wednesday. It was squamous cell.
Mm.
So, you know, I was I was punching everything and crying sure. like a baby and all that stuff.
Sure.
And I honestly felt, I know this sounds like, we're watching This Is Us. Are you familiar with the show?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a tough show to watch.
Every freaking episode.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah.
So this is like, I don't want to be overly dramatic or whatever, but I was 51 years old, and I was like, okay, I had a lot of fun back in the day, whatever, lived a good life, and said, if this is it, this is it. I'm not that brave. I was just realistic or whatever.
Right.
But I was my boys were 9 and 10 then, and I wasn't ready to leave, you know. They deserved me around to bust their chops or whatever.
Yeah.
I figured if I could make it, when they get out of high school, at least into high school, you know, they'll be good or whatever. But I wasn't, I was 51, they were 9 and 10, you know. I wasn't ready to go, so. But anyway, so now it was time for the staging. I'm sure you're familiar.
Yep.
And in those days, if you will, I don't think it's that much different now, but if you're stage three, I know it was at least stage three because I had two lesions, base of the tongue and the neck.
Keep talking.
Air conditioning just popped on for some reason.
Yeah. So stage three was a 50% chance of living 5 years, and stage four was a 22% chance of living 5 years. That's mortality versus morbidity. Oral cancer has a, I don't know how to put this, the oral cancer, people that are diagnosed with oral cancer have the greatest percentage of people that basically don't go back into society because they're often turned into something that people can't comfortably hang out with, if you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And we're not talking total numbers. Oral cancer doesn't compare in total numbers. But percent of people that get diagnosed don't go back into society, more than any other cancer. So, P.S., I was shooting for stage three, and again, my friends bust my chops about
you
using the expression. I hit the home run.
There you go.
Ended up with stage four, 22% chance to live in 5 years. Most people I guess, I don't remember the statistic, but a great percentage don't make it 6 months. As I mentioned earlier, it was still that way in 2007 as when I graduated dental school in 1983. So that's where the story of diagnosis begins and treatment, story of diagnosis ends and the story of treatment begins.
Yeah. It's such a, my wife had squeamish, and her thing was, you keep saying like something a guy would do. She did exactly the same thing. She thought
God bless her. The women are smarter. But
not this. She thought she bit the inside of her cheek.
Yep.
Right. Lets it go. And it starts like really hurting, and she's very close with her dentist. Like personally, they just get along like really well. So she's like, this isn't healing, and it's been months. I'm like, just go ask the dentist. So she goes to the dentist, and he takes one look. 45 minutes later, she's getting a biopsy.
Oh, my God.
The surgeon comes out and says, listen, my job is to take a little piece of this and tell you in 2 weeks what it is, right?
Yep.
He goes, I know what I'm looking at. Tell me to go along, and I'll go along right here and now. He took a 2-inch tumor out of her, yep, out of her cheek.
And so
we had to wait the 2 weeks, but we didn't have to wait the 2 weeks.
Yeah,
but I knew for 2 weeks before she knew because I wanted her to hear from a doctor. Cause I don't know what, you know. They know how to say it better or whatever.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. And then so you had surgery.
I then had. Again, long story short, but I had chemo, radiation.
First.
I don't know if you want to hear the whole thing, but
yeah.
I think people listening can relate to, the medical system is broken. The music industry is broken. To me, everything's broken.
Right.
And it was broken then. But so I was, let's see, I was told by the chairman of hematology oncology that I should have surgery first. I had a 7-centimeter lesion in my neck. That was a secondary tumor. That's the size of a baseball, if you're familiar. Oof. And the lesion, my primary lesion, was the base of the tongue. That was 4 centimeters, about a Super Bowl. I think you might remember a Super Bowl.
How dare you even assume that? I do remember Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Very well.
And so that's 4 centimeters-ish. And people said to me, that's impossible. Like, how were you able to swallow, or couldn't you see like a baseball coming out of your throat? I can't answer that, but I can tell you I have a lot of doctor friends that I played tennis with, people I played music with that in the medical field. Nobody saw it because it didn't stick out. You go, well, where, like, then it stuck in, so you shouldn't have been able to swallow. And I had no pain from swallowing. I had nothing. You couldn't see this. You can only feel it.
Right.
And that's the point I want to get across, is that as soon as you feel something that doesn't feel right, you need to reach out and get it checked out or call me.
How do we call you?
914-456-6385 is my cell. And then if you get to the ORCA website, which is 4, the number 4, ORCA, like the whale, ORCA.org, or you can Google Larry Hamburg, you can find me very easily, Facebook, Instagram, whatever else is out there.
And your whole practice now is oral cancer.
Well, I retired 3 years ago.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did, to work on ORCA and the music stuff and plan on going to the gym 2 hours a day. That goes.
You're living my life.
Well, man plans,
I do,
God
laughs. I do sank. I play guitar, and I go to the gym 2 hours a week.
But my buddy's there.
Erica.
Erica is the love of my life. All due respect to Charlie.
Erica, Campbell. Yeah. No, I started a caregiver division for Thank.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and we're actually building a caregiver app because did you have a caregiver?
Like my somebody primary was with caregiver. You. Yeah, my wife at the time, yeah.
I would love to talk to her.
She would. She's delightful.
It is so hard, and you get in the middle of it, and so many times, like the doctors or the nurses would say, "Look, with all due respect to the patient, the caregiver is the one that works
the hardest." Yeah. Yep, absolutely. My job was easy compared to her.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, and there's so many things. There's so many like. You as a patient only remember 20% of what the doctor says.
At best.
Yeah. Right, yeah. me, your husband, sitting there, I'm traumatized too. I'm only catching 50%.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're building an app that has questions to ask, schedule for medication, alarms for medications.
Got a co-parent.
Keep the appointment. Keep the appointments. Schedule your appointments or your pharmacy, everything so that –
What was the, the bicyclist?
Lance Armstrong.
Lance Armstrong worked with group.
Livestrong.
Livestrong. Thank you for filling in the blanks.
No, no worries, man.
I got CRS, if you're familiar.
No, what's CRS?
I can't remember shit.
Oh, okay.
And it's getting worse. It's becoming craft.
Did you... What's craft?
Can't remember a fucking thing.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
You can delete that if necessary.
No. I'm actually, that's the cue we're going to use.
All right. I'll be
gentle. No, don't be gentle. Curse
so
the fuck
Livestrong
away.
Has a fabulous, fabulous like notebook.
Yeah.
Loose leaf, I call it. Yeah. Binder.
Yeah.
And
which is great, but now we have these.
That. Yeah.
So, listener, I picked up my phone, but you probably figured that out. we're doing an app and we're doing an online caregiver resource and caregiver support groups.
That's fabulous.
And No. It's funny how, like, I got a billion questions.
Yeah.
Brain fog. Like, you went through cancer and radiation.
Yeah.
Right?
Chemo brain. That's what they call
chemo
it.
Chemo brain, yeah.
Yeah, I still got it.
That's what I wanted
it
to
might
ask.
Might be from COVID. I think it's because I just turned 69. I don't know.
I
can't remember what, shit.
Oh, yeah, are there any other changes that you can attribute to it?
Well, I guess everything in my life is different from the day I was diagnosed. But I had a polyp on my vocal cords removed a year ago, so I sound more like, if I can say, a black Mississippi blues singer.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's what I want to sound like, but not because I have to.
So it worked out. Was that traumatic to have to go back in for? Did you had surgery for the tumor, right?
It's, what do they call PTSD?
Yeah.
All you got to do is put me in a hospital gown. And I'm like, you put somebody in a Vietnam, outfit in the jungle anywhere, they're going to be,
Yep.
So, not to be, again, overly dramatic to sell newspapers, but...
No. You're not being overly dramatic at all.
Don't like going into the hospital.
Oh, yeah. No. So when my wife got done, she had surgery. So
when was she diagnosed?
2.5 years ago.
So she's a 2.5 year survivor.
Yep.
To
yeah.
me, the day you're diagnosed is the first day of...
Yep. God bless, And she had, Dr. Erkin, right?
Intimately, yes.
Beautiful. He did the show.
Really?
Yeah. He did the show.
He was here where I'm sitting.
We did it virtually.
Oh, okay.
he did the show. He's an amazing man. I asked him a couple questions that you might find this interesting, because when my wife's name is Trish, when she would go to see him, like he'd close his eyes and feel, and I'm like, you have a scan. Like, why do you do that? And he's like, I trust my hands.
Yeah.
And he goes, I just have this thing. I can feel your neck. I cannot see you for 6 years. I come back and I can remember exactly what your neck felt like.
He's amazing.
He's
absolutely
incredible.
Amazing. I've sent so many people there and we've had mostly good experience. Couple of people didn't make it, but I tell everybody the same thing as when I refer to an oral surgeon or whatever. I'm like, if you end up with a less than ideal result, you would have had that less than ideal result with anybody,
right?
And vice versa,
right?
He's the man.
He's incredible. So she had a surgery that went from like the back of her ear all the way down the side of her neck and all the way across.
I'll show you the picture.
Oh, you got the same thing?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. You do?
Yeah.
Oh, you got the same exact
thing? I got it all. Oh, okay.
But it was so sad when she came out. because you're talking about reentry, mm-hmm. you know, into society. Like, she's being, I'm going up to the room where she's supposed to be, and I didn't know that she was behind me.
Is it BI or is it Sinai?
Sinai.
It used to be BI.
Yeah. But I didn't know she was behind me. I'm just going to the room because it was supposed to be like an hour and a half surgery. It went like 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And it took 15 lymph nodes out and the whole shoot.
Ditto.
Okay, you know. You got. I wish she was here. You guys would have something to talk about. And I hear her croaking behind me. She's like, John. And I turn around and she's like, my face. And I'm like, it was fine. And I went, your face is fine. God. But it was so, like, just to see. And so the PTSD.
Yeah.
Because that shit is real.
Yeah.
So she gets done with treatment. And you had the chemo and radiation first, and then you had surgery.
Yeah, I was saying that the hematologist, oncologist that I saw first after I had the biopsy told me I have squamous cell, and I freaked out. And then I went back for staging, and I was hoping for stage three, right. And he told me it was stage three. So I go back to the office. I'm high-fiving everybody, you know, my coworkers, what have you, my staff, whatever, were really like family. And everybody's high-fiving and holding hands and crying and all that stuff because this is great. I have a 50% chance of making 5 years. I couldn't be happier. And then that doctor who not be named calls me up and says Lawrence, which I love to hear already. I'm like, oh no. He's like, well, I was going over to my notes, and due to the size of your secondary tumor and so forth, I told you it was stage three, but it's actually stage four. And you go, three, four, what's the difference, as the dice man would say, right. Whatever. Well, you're talking 50-50 shot. So I would have given anything to be diagnosed stage three. And that's when I said, all right, well, I was done. Yeah. I really felt like, what are the odds, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
it's so funny. You all say the exact same thing. Yeah. You said I wasn't. You know, I had kids. I wasn't ready to go.
Yeah.
And my wife, they called my wife and told her that it's cancer. I kind of knew it. So I was like 15 minutes away from home. So I'm heading home. I get through the door. I cry about this all the time. You get through the door, and she looks at me. She goes, "I'm not ready to stop being a mom and a teacher."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "You didn't say husband."
That's rhetorical.
Yeah. But it's the same thing. You're just not ready. You're not ready yet.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think about my wife at the time. I was like, she'll find somebody else. But the kids, it's different. You know?
So then you had surgery.
Well, so to pick up the storyline, if you want, keep going, or we can move on. But the chairman of the hematology oncology department was my doctor, and he told me you're gonna have surgery first, and then we're gonna do chemo and radiation. And I'm like, yes. So I was like a 4-year-old at that point, with my hands out, like, just anybody that'll take me. I'm like, I was the dentist. I was the guy that, you know, whatever, we're going to go this way versus that way. And I was done. I was like, no more control. Just tell me what to do. If that's what he said, that's what we'll do. We went to the surgeon, and the surgeon, you know, locally, and the surgeon said, no, we do chemo and radiation first. We'll shrink the tumors, and then the surgery will go better and so forth. And I'm like, dudes, I don't care. You tell me to stand on my head in the corner, you know.
Right.
But you guys got to figure it out. Talk to each other. I'll do whatever you say. They wouldn't agree. One guy stood on, you know, what he was saying. The other guy. So I knew Danny Aronson a little bit at the time. He's the president at Vassar. And he had said to me, I'd met him at a cocktail party and on the golf course, whatever. And he had said to me once, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know. In reference to me being a dentist, you know, something. And so I got in touch with Dr. Aronson, God bless him, and I said, listen, this is my situation. What should I do? And he's like, I will have my best radiation oncologist call you within the hour. Is that okay? And this came out of left field. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And Dr. Papadopoulos, God bless him, called me and he said, Larry, I'm the same age as you. If I had this problem, I would do chemo and radiation first and then have surgery. I was like, okay.
Sold, yeah, yeah.
Cool. And the question then was, where should I go for treatment? Should I stay local or should I go somewhere else? And my kids from camp, who are now 60 or so, when I was a counselor, you know, say I was 23 and the kids were 14. I was counselor in Elizaville, by the way, at Camp Scatico, which is, so I was familiar with Kingston since I'm 8 years old. I was thinking of that coming here in a big circle, you know.
Beautiful.
So my kids from camp formed a mini committee of six. They're all, you know, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs. And through the internet, they sent me the most beautiful digital document you've ever seen that said, if you want to stay in New York for treatment or in the area, you should go to, obviously, Vassar, where I was going, or Sloan, where I had referred everybody to in my 25 years of practice or whatever, or Beth Israel. And with that, they gave me digital links to the email of the chairman of the department, something like that. Here, you can research this guy, including Mark Erkin. Mm. If you want to go anywhere in the nation, you have a choice of NIH in Baltimore, I think, Washington, Dana-Farber in Boston, or MD Anderson in Houston. Those are the three top places in the country. And again, they gave me links to those.
They did your homework, yeah.
Which I couldn't have done that, yeah. Even when I was healthy. My ex-wife, I don't think, could have done that or wouldn't have. This was a I cherish that information.
Yeah.
And then I followed it up from there. And I formed another mini committee of a dear, dear friend who was an oral surgeon, an anesthesiologist, OBGYN, and a plastic surgeon. And I was like, all right, guys, do I have to go to one of these famous places and up and move to Houston or whatever? Or can I stay local? And they agreed that I should, for the first time I did it, it was okay to be treated locally at one of those three places. If I had a recurrence, then I needed to go to one of those other places. Right. And they convinced me to do the most radical treatment. Whatever treatment scares the shit out of you, the most, like you go take anything that you can get.
Yep. Yep.
So I ended up, I had a consult at those three hospitals, Vassar, obviously, Beth Israel, and Sloan. I'll spare you the details. And I ended up with Beth Israel, Dr. Erkin, offered, you know, have chemo and radiation first, then we'll do the surgery, and we're going to do brachytherapy, which was a new thing to me, which is, it's kind of interesting. They impregnate the base of the tongue tumor. So he removed the tumor on the side of my neck and the 15 or so lymph nodes on that side, as opposed to bilateral radical neck dissection, which was recommended at the other places. So it was only on one side. And they did brachytherapy where they implant, look like guitar strings is my point, that go from outside of the neck like a U shape, God knows how they do this, up into the base of the tongue and out. So it looked like I had eight bolts. I can show you the picture on radio.
Cool.
Eight bolts sticking out of my neck. And I was in isolation for 24 hours, I believe it was, might have been 48, locked in a room. And I'm claustrophobic, so that was another one of those fun times.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the outcome of that, that I learned a life lesson. But anyway, so I had chemo, radiation, surgery, and brachytherapy. I had prayer coming out of every denomination. I'm Jewish, so I had, you know, rabbis, and I had friends doing Reiki therapy on me, and anything and anybody that would do anything, I was like, come on, bring it on. Yeah. You know, I had friends at the local monastery, Mount Alvernia, mm-hmm. that prayed, the Buddhist monks, I believe you'd refer to as, praying for me. And so I give them all the credit in the world.
That's beautiful, man.
So,
and then, yeah. So now you're done, right? You're out of...
Well,
tell me about the PTSD, because then I'll tell you a story.
Well, for 3 years, I didn't work because I felt like, I don't want to sound like a jerk, but I did everything I could to help my patients. I tried to, you know, care for them. It wasn't just drill them, fill them, bill them.
Right.
You know, it was different. It was a good friend.
Although it
of
sounds like that's not the first time you said drill them, bill them.
Yeah, I learned that one time, and that was not our practice. We were there to help people, right. And that's why I love doing it. And once, I'll tell you a brief story. I was in the office when I was going through all this, the throes of chemo. So we did chemo first every 3 weeks for 3 sessions, I believe, and then radiation started. Radiation was 5 days a week for about a half an hour. That's another claustrophobia anecdote, I'll say, for another day. So we had what's called concurrent chemo and radiation. Yep. I'm going through this. You know, it's almost like they're trying to kill you. If it doesn't, you're trying to kill cancer cells. They're trying not to kill you, but it felt like they were trying to kill me.
Yeah.
And that was about 3 months of treatment. Anyway, one day I'm in the office. I would go to the office to do whatever I could to help sort of run the office, whatever you want to call it. And I bumped into a patient friend of mine. And he's like, how's it going, Doc, with the, your treatment? I gave him the 2-minute elevator speech, chemo and radiation. And then he proceeds to tell me about his rotator cuff surgery and how painful it was and how difficult it was for 20 minutes straight. I did take a glance at my watch. I was like, oh, my God. Which, you know, how people are.
It's
like, you know. And I was sitting there being as sympathetic as I could. But you know what the little voice inside my head was going, like, are you fucking kidding me?
Right, right, right. Yeah. So Trish gets done with her whole treatment thing and blah, blah. And over last summer, she is in a spin cycle class and she breaks her ankle. And I wasn't there. So her friends take her to the hospital and she calls from the hospital and she's like, I have a broken ankle. And I'm like, oh, my God, how bad is it? She goes, it's adorable. Once you've had what you guys had,
like, stop the bar.
It. Right, right, right. Like, stop it.
Yeah, that's pretty much every day. It's like, really?
Yeah.
I was whining about my colonoscopy prep the other night and thinking, oh, boo, what was me? I'm like, nah.
Yeah, right.
Not the worst thing.
I think Well, that's a – so two stories to tell you this, just because I want to see if they resonate with you.
Yeah.
One is, and I cry at both of them, so sorry. One is she gets done with the whole thing just like you. And she goes, and her dentist had been on the, what do you call it when you're allowed to see the medical records? The
clearance.
He had clearance. So he had access to her files and he followed her the whole way through, beautiful. But they never actually saw each other because it was just back and forth. You know the joy. You're back and forth to... So she's out and she wants to go see him. And so here we are crying. So they go to see each other. And I got to sit in the room. And she's sitting in a chair. And she's still, you're beat to shit for a long time afterwards.
100%, yeah.
And she's sitting and he walks in and they just start hugging. And they start crying.
Yeah, sure.
And he goes to her and they're whispering, but I can hear it. He goes, how was it? And she goes, it was really hard. And he pushes her away a little bit, looks her in eyeball, and goes, now you know you can do hard things.
Yeah.
Right? I will never forget that.
The gift of cancer.
I will never forget that, man.
Yeah.
I try to keep that with me every
can
day.
Can you tell me off mic who the dentist is? Or
Totally. Yeah. Dr. Sang.
All right, I don't know.
Yeah. Westchester.
Okay.
Yeah, Mount Kisco. Brilliant.
God
brilliant,
bless
him.
Man.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and it was the perfect thing to say it, to try to. So, but the PTSD is, it's like she got out, and you know about the Lifted Project?
No, I'm sorry.
I'm going to invite you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand. Yes.
The concert.
Yeah. Thing. Yes. Well, I'm sorry.
So no, don't be sorry.
Yeah.
So well, this is this story and story I found I would probably resonate with you. So she gets out, and like they said, you know, look, we could give you physical therapy if you want, because like neuropathy, can't walk, let alone eat, and you right.
My hands and feet were numb. That was one of the reasons why I didn't go back to work for 3 years.
Right. Yeah, and the other is
not the biggest reason.
Well, the other was who wants to be under lights like that?
Well, I want to hear your story, Trisha's story, but I felt after that conversation with the rotator cuff guy, God put him there for a reason. I wasn't ready to go back to work to take care of people.
Oh, I see.
To have somebody come in and go, yeah, you know, there's a piece of popcorn stuck between my teeth and it's killing me.
Yeah. You got to get out of that head. You got to get out of that head. I totally get that.
So I ran the office. I would go into the office, work, quote unquote, from 8:30 to 1:30. And then I would go home and pick up the kids off the bus. And then I got to hang out with my boys every afternoon for a couple of years, which is invaluable. And God works in strange ways. And, I probably spent more time with them because I had cancer than if I never had cancer.
Yeah. But so that 3 years makes sense. So she gets out and, you know, she's bald in the back of her head. And she's, you know, got the, like, you got the big, all the swelling and your mouth is tilted and she doesn't want to, all everybody's looking at is,
my God made turtlenecks.
Yeah. and she can't, you know, she can't walk. So she's in the chair for like 3 weeks and like not watching TV and eating pudding when she can.
Yeah.
It's so weird to tell
her. She had trouble swallowing, though.
Yeah. She had a little bit of trouble swallowing. Right. They were like this close to a food tube.
Wow. Yeah. See, in my day, again, God bless him, my doctor said, you know, we're going to put a tube in before you go through everything because once you need it, we won't be able to do it.
Right.
So we're going to do it first.
Right. Well, we're talking about working out.
Yeah.
So I'm 22-hour-a-day caregiver, but for 2 hours a day, I went and worked out. And I'm friends with all my friends, my gym trainers and stuff. And so we have a meeting at the hospital with the oncologist on a Monday. And he says, you lose any more weight by Friday, and we're doing a food tube. And
oh, God. I was
scared to death, right? She can't get anything down. Everything tastes. It's so weird.
It's like cardboard or plastic.
Yeah, it's so weird to tell the story to somebody who knows exactly what I'm talking about because most people
I can finish your sentence.
Yeah, you can. But I go there and I had this friend, she's a trainer named Stephanie. And I'm like real upset and crying. And I'm like, you know, the last thing we need is like a food tube because the food tube will be there for a while because it's. You're there for a while. So she goes, John. You work out right next to a Starbucks. Go there, get the biggest frappa, whatever the chino, put as much whipped cream as you can on it, and bring it to her right now. Stop working out. Go do that right now. I'm like, okay. So I go and I get it, and I walk in the house, and she looks at me, and she's like, oh, I wish I could ever have that again.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, this is for you. And she drank it, and she could actually kind of taste it and like it.
Really?
She actually gained a pound and a half that week.
Oh, my
God. And
gosh.
It was so beautiful. So then, but this is how it comes full circle, which is why I want to get to Orca. So then, like, you know, I tell this story a couple times. You know Esai? You know Esai, the company? Oh, she was supposed to call me today, by the way, and did not. Okay. You know the Esai? Company Esai? They're a pharmaceutical company.
No, I don't think
so. Oh, they do head and neck cancer drugs now. Okay. So they call and they're like, hey, we've heard the story on the show of the Frappuccino. They're like, would you guys come on and do like a cooking show and teach people online?
Wow.
Yeah. So we flip that one around. So then she gets out, right? And the PTSD, like, you know, which is why you want this to catch this shit on day one.
Yes.
What you and Trish went through is inhuman.
Yeah.
And the PTSD is insane. So she gets out and she can't. So I put a. Her treatment ended December 30th, right? So it's like January. I'm making up a number, 20th. And it's cold, but it's clear.
Oh,
so I'm like,
cold from October to April.
Yeah. So I go, we got to go. We got to go outside. I'm going to try to walk you. We'll take like 10 steps. We're going to do 10 steps. Put a winter coat on her. She can't stand up because the coat's too heavy. Put a blanket on her. She goes out, and she gets out from the shadow of the house, and she starts lifting her neck. And I thought that usually means something's wrong.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you're always right. She remembered the sun.
Yeah.
See, you've been there.
Yeah.
She was remembering the sun. So we do 10 steps. And then like 2 days later, we do 12 steps. And then a week and a half later, we do like 16 steps. And I finally get her down the driveway and back up the driveway. But that's about it. And she's still not going out in public. And she's still not blah, blah. So I work out 2 hours a day. So I take these classes with this trainer. And so I go to the trainer and I said, what would happen if I put Trish in the back of the class and she just kind of shuffles a little bit? And I'll go with her. But it'll get her out of the house and it'll get her body at least moving because I can't walk her anymore. It's not like we've stalled out. And she's also got to get out of the house.
Yeah.
But she's same thing like you. She thinks she's disfigured for life and not going to reenter society and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I swear to God, I didn't think, you know the expression, one day at a time? my sister actually got me a thing for my keychain that said one day at a time. And I said, Andy, you know, if I go to valet or something, people are going to think I'm AA. And then I was like, yeah, who gives a fuck?
Right, yeah, exactly. Let them
because I said one day at a time.
Yeah.
Literally all day long.
Yep.
I do want to interject, if there's anybody listening who is going through stuff or whatever, and this doesn't only pertain to, you know, physical issues or whatever. I was doing one day at a time from day one of this saga, if you will. And what I tell people is when it got tough, it was 1 hour at a time.
Yep.
But when I was in the sealed off room with the brachytherapy, and I was freaking out, and I was like, how am I going to get through this? Because you can't, you know, I can't sit in the middle seat on a plane for 10 seconds without having, whatever, freaking out. So I'm in this locked room. I'm on all kinds of drugs, but nothing that's going to, I'm like, you know, the pain was whatever, and I couldn't swallow, rah, rah, rah. But being locked in, I was freaking out. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I was down to 1 hour at a time, and I was like, that's not working. And I remember looking at the clock. I can picture it like I can see that thing on the wall here. It was 10:45. It was like the old clock from elementary school, you know. Mm. And I was like, all right, I'm going to figure out what can I possibly do for the next 15 minutes.
Yep.
I had a guitar with me. I had CDs, DVDs with me. I had whatever. I'm like, I just got to get through till 11 o'clock. And whatever I did, somehow 15 minutes went by. And then I was like, oh, I made it. How can I get to 11:15? And I don't care if you're going through mental stuff or physical stuff, what have you. I've had friends who I told that story to, and they're like, Larry, I got down to 5 minutes at a time. I'm like, little bites, baby.
I'm texting this is crazy. I'm texting somebody yesterday. And I said, I remember when Trish had cancer, I got so overwhelmed that I would talk to myself all the time. It would be 2 o'clock, and I would say, just get to 2:15.
Oh, shit.
And when I did, I would say, okay, now 2:30, literally 15 minutes.
There you go.
But you get there. Put enough 15-minute steps together, and you get a day, and then you get a week.
That's it.
Yeah,
or 18 years.
Yeah, how crazy.
Two and a half.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, right? That's the number for me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I never got down to 5.
Yeah, good.
But, an hour's but 15 minutes.
So I bring her to this class, right? I go, Trish, we're going to this class. And she goes, and she's got a ball cap on and a scarf and big sunglasses. And we go to the back of the class, and she's shuffling, and the lights are freaking her out because it reminds her of radiation. But she's like, no, obviously, she can shuffle. We're like 5 minutes into this class, and my friend goes from the front of the class, goes back and grabs her. He's like, fuck this. Brings her up, turns her around, makes her face everybody, and shuffles.
Oh, my God.
And shuffles the class with her while everybody else is doing lifting weights and cardio. Shuffles the thing with her. So we get done.
There's a movie in there. You know that.
So we get done with the class, and I bring her in. I'm sitting her in the car, and she's like, you know, she's crying, but she's like, could we ever do that again? At the same time, she says that my phone rings, and it's my friend. And my friend says, get her the fuck back in here now. So we go in the next day. And my friend says, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to work with you while everybody else does what they're supposed to do. I'm just going to work with you. They start doing that every single day. Now, Trish has neuropathy. She can't, So we're about a month in. You know what a box jump is?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's like a 2-foot box jump. So part of this class is a box jump. So we're like a month in, and Trish has gone from like shuffling to kind of like to walking and, you know.
Okay. Oh, my God.
And yeah, it's great. So we say, okay, it's time. You know, we're going to work on the box jump. So we bring out a 3-inch thing, and she tries to jump on the 3-inch thing. She can't. She trips. She falls over. She's crying. My friend puts her body over her, and they talk for 2 minutes, and I don't know what gets said. But whatever it was magic, because Trish gets up and wipes her eyes and just starts going again. At the end of that class, my friend takes Trish over to the 2-foot box jump and says, we go every day until you can jump up on this thing.
Oh, my God. Right?
No money's changing hands. No, it's just love. No money's changing hands. It's just one person who can stand up leaning on, being the leaning post for one person who can't stand up. So months go by, and we do this every day. My friend shuffles with Trish. Everybody else is jumping rope. My friend shuffles with Trish. Everybody else is lifting weight. Finally, Trish can jump on the 3. Then she can jump on 6-inch. Then she can jump up on a foot. So one day, she's standing in front of the 2-foot box jump, right? And she can put her foot, like, she can raise her foot to put it on it and then put it 1 foot down and then raise the other foot. Now, they've been working together for 4 months. This is how strong love is. They've been working together for 4 months now. And Trish, who never thought that she was going to go back out in public, is now teaching again and is now and my friend threw a party so that Trish had to get a haircut and dress up and there was just a lawn full of people just hugging her, and it was amazing. So they build this trust, right? So Trish can get 1 foot up and then the other foot up, and my friend comes over and they go head to head, forehead to forehead again, but this time I can hear it. And my friend says, you can do this today. You are a feather. You can fly. You can do this today. And then just steps back. Whole circle of people come around because now everybody's curious. And Trish looks at me, and I'm like, dude, I don't know. You people are magic. I don't know what you And she goes and looks at my friend. My friend's like,
Just go.
And she just jumped up on a 2-foot box. It was amazing.
That is amazing.
It was amazing. And everybody's sobbing. And then, because we go to like a Lifetime gym, so they're a national company, so they have a PR department. So next thing you know, the Today Show's covering them, and then Newsweek's covering them, and then
that's so cool.
Yeah, it is an alternative way, but it broke the PTSD. So I would love to invite you to the Lifted Project, by the way.
I'll be there.
That's what the Lifted Project is. It's
very busy, but I'm very flexible.
April 6th.
I can do whatever I want when I
Beautiful.
Want.
Beautiful.
I'll be there.
All right, April 6th. I'll get you tickets. But that's what the Lifted Project is. It's about, you know, we don't raise any money. We don't – you just get in a room and create an energy and see where it goes.
Yeah.
That's a hard story to tell. Did you get therapy afterwards?
Well, I recently had voice therapy. I had voice therapy because of the polyp removal, and at that, the speech pathologist, my dear friend Nahida, and I figured out that I should have done this when I got done with my, you know, oral cancer treatment and so forth. As far as mental therapy, I meet with a therapist now that helps me figure out what I want to be when I grow up type of stuff. Honestly, she's terrific. Her name is Reem. And it's almost like I feel like I don't need to be there anymore, but that's why I should be. Mm-hmm. I go to a massage therapist, wellness coach. So I have to interject that. So what have I been doing for the last 3 years since I retired? My plan was 2 hours of orca a day, 2 hours to play with my dog, who's the most adorable dog ever. What kind of dog? She's an English cream golden retriever named Tupelo Honey, if you're familiar.
Yep, I am familiar. First dog was a golden retriever. They're holy animals.
Well, I mean, Tupelo Honey, she's as sweet as Tupelo Honey. She's an angel of the first degree. You remember that?
No.
The Morrison song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And she'll be 13 on April 1st. We're having a bas mitzvah for her. It's going to be very exciting. Or 91 in people a year. So she was my therapy dog in my dental office for many years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
That's amazing.
So I retired on January 13th, 2022. And on January 16th or 17th, my back went out, which used to happen on occasion. And I figured it would be 6 weeks, or I had episodes that lasted 6 months, I believe. This went 2 years plus. So for the last several months, I've been doing good, but I go to a wellness coach who I'd love to put you together with, Jeff Hartford, who's a massage therapist, but what he does for me is just back and neck, and it's like acupressure kind of thing.
Yeah.
He can correct me, but he's more like my therapist. Like, I'm not lying there just having him like make my back feel better. Right. We're talking all kinds of stuff, and he's brilliant, and he's
fantastic.
Terrific, and you guys, he does a podcast.
Oh,
you
wow.
guys should get together.
Yeah.
And then I have a chiropractor, God bless him, Lou Spagnola, who get adjusted once a week. And he's also, what I love about Lou is he's not just a chiropractor, he's also, I believe, a nurse practitioner.
Okay.
So I don't have to just talk what I call voodoo with him. I can talk like Eastern philosophy, Western philosophy, right. medicine, and we're on the same page. So I see him once a week because I'm afraid to not see him. And then I do the Healthy Neck, Healthy Back program at Mike Ortega's every other week. So everybody's got a piece of me, and I'm starting to feel better, and I'm leaving tonight to go to Florida to check out the Villages. If anybody knows anybody at the Villages, I want to know more about that. But that's like, seems like it's like camp. They have 150,000 people, 3,500 groups, and I'm looking forward to hopefully go down there a couple of months a year and play golf every day.
Tired of winter?
Play a lot of music. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're tired of
just the winters, yeah.
Yeah,
I love it up here, spring, summer, and fall. But not skiing anymore in the winter. And it's tougher to get the guys over to play when it's snowing. And,
right, yeah. right. How much do you play a day?
I play every day.
You do play every
day? Yeah, yeah.
What kind of guitar do you have? What's your go-to guitar?
My go-to is a PRS Hollow.
Yeah.
But I have 28 at last count.
28.
Tell all the girls I have much better equipment than I have talent, but I got a lot of nice guitars. I guess my favorite is the 59 reissue Les Paul signed by Dickie Betts that just roars, but it's too heavy for me to play, which is like really funny.
Can you wear it? Can you play it if you wear it? Like just strap it up.
Yeah, once in a while, if I'm playing Blue Sky, I'll throw it on, but then I can't play, you know, Melissa after that.
Right.
I'm like done. So my PRS is hollow. It's a lot lighter.
Nice. You play 12-string?
I have a 12-string for sale because I'm just lazy about putting new strings on it, but it sounds like a beautiful. I'm not trying to sell it.
No, what kind of 12-string is it?
Ovation.
Oh, okay.
Shallow.
Okay.
So, but you got to come over and jam, baby.
Oh, I'd be happy to, man. I just changed the strings on my 12-string. Took me 2 days.
Yeah.
No, but here's why. I put it off for forever.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go through
that. Yeah,
that's
the hard part.
So I'm like, finally, okay, I'm doing this guitar series.
Yeah.
Thing. Okay. So I'm
Mazel
like,
tov.
Oh, thank you. So I'm like, all right, you gotta change strings. So I buy a set of strings that has the number 12 on it.
Yeah.
I go home, I open the thing up, I take all the strings off, right? And I open the packet up, there's only 6 strings in there. This is Sunday afternoon at like 4:30. The 12.
Which 6?
It was for a 6-string guitar. The 12 referred to the lightest gauge of one, the
oh,
one of the
shit.
And I was in a hurry, and I know that, but I didn't pay it. So now like, I'm screwed because you can't leave strings off a 12-string overnight. It'll twist.
Yeah.
So I get 2 sets of 6 strings, And I just put strings on it just to do tension. And then I had to, and then I overnighted strings. And then the next day I had to, 2 days to change.
I got one word for you.
Go ahead.
Alto.
Yeah.
I don't know what they charge.
No. I was originally I have a guide too. I was originally going to take it there.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, you should just do this yourself. It's stuff you
You know what I mean? Yeah. But the years go by.
Yeah, right. You finger pick at all?
Very little.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like that? You're a rock and roll guy. Hard.
Well, my fingers are numb from the chemo, so that's a good excuse.
That is a good excuse.
But I just never got good at it.
Okay.
And, Danny Perks, one of my best friends, is
been on the show.
Oh, is that right?
He's in the Lifted Project.
My kids call him Uncle Danny.
Oh, yeah. No, he's been on the show. And,
yeah,
and
so
he's
when he finger picks, you go, I'm never going to do that again.
No, he's a great guitar player.
He's phenomenal. Yeah.
He's been on the show twice, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah. Love him.
Yes.
He's got a good sense of
love.
Yeah. He's got a good sense of humor, too.
Yes. He's the funniest gynecologist I know. Yeah. Actually, he was on my CD, and I dedicated it to him, said to the to my favorite finger-picking gynecologist. That's about 20 years ago.
Did who's your favorite guitarist?
That ever lived, you mean, or locally?
Let's break it down. Favorite guitarist of all time?
Dickie Betts.
Favorite living guitarist?
Jamie Hamburg. My son is a Berkeley grad and phenomenal guitar player. And have you ever heard of Zach Bryan?
Sure.
My son is according to Zach Bryan's bass player, Jamie's the youngest front of house in the country, maybe the world. He's 28 years old and he's doing stadiums.
Oh, wow.
He does front of house for
Zach. Wonderful.
I'm very proud, Pop.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Favorite local guitarist? You don't have to say me. I'm not going to say it. My feelings will not be hurt.
Yeah, I don't want to say that.
Fair enough.
There are too many.
Yeah.
I
say this all the time, but it's around here. It is weird.
It's
how
not
many
fair.
Talented musicians there
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I say to my girlfriend, Charlie, every time we go out, we would go out every weekend and see somebody play. And I'm like, geez, can we just go see a band where they have a guitarist that's like not twice as good as me, three times as good as me. I'm so embarrassed to be up on stage. But what I bring to the band is, organization, and we're there just to spread the word about oral cancer, oral cancer awareness, get people to go for their, this one says take a bite out of cancer. But,
love that.
People
have the biggest wrists in the world, though, man.
No, this is a small
one. Oh, there we go.
Take that one.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's too big for me.
Oh, okay. There we go.
But we say don't ask for an oral cancer screening, demand it. It's your right.
Yeah.
People can charge you $30 if they want to. But the secret to beating this disease and having a ideal outcome is getting it early, just like every type of cancer and lots of other diseases. And so you got to not ask your dentist for oral cancer screening, but, demand it. You should have it once a year. Policy is that you should have it from the age of 17 up. I know people that have been diagnosed with oral cancer that are less than 17. So in my practice, we did everybody 14 and up, just once a year. It's a quick, easy exam, and ORCA supports adjunctive devices. So there are devices that work by, so dysplastic tissue, if you will, like precancerous tissue, will show up with one of these devices that looks like a flashlight, and I'm sure some of your listeners have been exposed to it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel anything, and it just increases the chance that we can find something at an earlier stage.
Mm.
And if something is healthy, it's going to glow. And if it's not healthy, if it's this plastic tissue, it doesn't glow. So if we see something like that in a dental practice, and usually it's the hygienist doing all the work, of course, and not getting enough credit. But if we see something that doesn't glow, it's as simple as that. We ask the patient to go to the oral surgeon and have them look and maybe do a biopsy, if you will. But there are lots of other devices and technologies that people should be aware of. And if we can, like I said earlier, if you can be diagnosed stage three, that more than doubles your chance of survival. Stage one, you're going to be 80 to 90% chance of survival. Mm-hmm. So can I tell you a quick little story and then I'll shut up? So I was, I went to see Dickie Betts' band play at the Bardavon. I had sponsored Dickie Betts' concert one time there and before I got sick. And so this was after I was sick. Anyway, I'm in the lobby and I see some girl that I recognize barely. And then I'm like, oh, wow, that's Ann. Ann was the lead singer in my group in the 80s. The name of the group was Tongue in Cheek. How ironic, right?
There you go, yeah.
Because all our humor was tongue in cheek, but under the circumstances. The point of story is, I wish your listeners could see my finger, but Ann comes over to me in the lobby at the Bardavon, and she gives me the finger, you know, the second finger, whatever. Yeah. She points at me and she goes, you saved my life. And I'm like, barely realized who it was. I'm like, Ann, what are you doing? What are you talking about? P.S. They had a picture of me on the cover of the Poughkeepsie Journal talking about Orca or whatever years ago. And she had seen the picture. She's like, I never read the journal, but I saw your picture, so I read it. And I went to my dentist and I said, do you ever do oral cancer screenings? And she's like, yeah, we do them all the time. And she's like, Larry, I swear to you, the lady never did an oral cancer screening on me. But she takes a look, and she found a lesion, obviously. She was diagnosed with stage one. They removed the little piece of this plastic tissue, if you will, off of her tongue, and she's fine ever since. And she's a phenomenal singer.
That's amazing.
Her. Yeah. The name of that band is Boomcat, if you're familiar with it. You know Ann Byrne and Paul Byrne?
I think I do, yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
If you don't, you should.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
You get asked this all the time. What's the lesson? Aside from get yourself checked all the time, what's the life lesson out of this?
Oh, I guess it's one day at a time. I think I've been accused of being OCD, pain in the ass, all that stuff, but control freak and everything. And somebody said to me that, you know, God had probably hit me in the head with a pebble and I ignored it. And then he hit me with a rock and I ignored it. And then he hit me with a boulder and that I didn't ignore. And so for the last 18 years, I've tried to be a little better and less controlling and living life one day at a time.
Well, speaking of controlling, let me go over the questions that you gave me.
I got to give you the punchline, Jack.
Oh, go ahead.
Learned anything, I lived for many years. I learned in a seminar that the secret to happiness is knowing what you want and asking for it. This has nothing to do with cancer. Point is, a couple of years ago, maybe one or two, Tony Robbins, who I guarantee you're familiar with, Tony Robbins said the secret to happiness is to be grateful. And that's where I sit before you now, and that's the secret to happiness. Mm. I don't know, you know. I actually had a psychiatrist friend of mine tell me that you don't search for happiness, you just search for contentment, because our reality changes every 7 seconds. So I'm feeling very content these days. I'm bordering on happy, and I'm happy to be here.
I think that's the sweet spot. I think that's right. Because I've had like there's one in particular. I have people like happiness coaches on and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, the goal, ultimate goal is happiness. And I'm like, I don't think it's possible. If you're cognizant, I don't think it's possible because you're going to have, you know.
Yeah, days are bad days.
But yeah. And there's value in some pain. There's value in some suffering. There's value in...
We learn more from our failures.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
The guitar taught me that.
Yeah.
All right. Why are you here today? Okay, got that one. How did you discover your cancer? Got that. That one happened. Got that.
I think we hit all the hot points.
Was there anyone in particular that gave you... Oh, was there anyone in particular that gave you your inspiration?
Yes, absolutely. It's a long story, and I got to go pack, but... When I was diagnosed, I was told that I had cancer and that I was like, so what do I do? What do I say at home? And I said, well, don't say anything for a while or whatever. But if you feel like you have to, you know, it's okay to tell your kids that you're sick or whatever. But don't use the C word. So for about 2 weeks, I was not telling him anything. I may have told him I was sick at some point. Anyway, they saw me on the phone, and I'm like crying every conversation I have with every friend ever, because I'm like that. I cry at commercials, you know, This Is Us, at least once an episode. And so there's something called guilt by omission, where you don't tell somebody something that you know you should tell them, you know. And I just felt guilty by omission. Like I brought my boys. I was 40 years older. I am 40 years older than my kids. And so I brought them up to be very, you know, mature for their age or whatever in that respect, tell them the harsh realities. P.S., I'm like, I got to tell them what's going on. This is like, I feel guilty, like I'm lying to them. So first I brought my oldest outside, Jamie, and we have a little path by my house. We took a little walk. And I said, Jamie, you know that I'm sick and everything. Do you have any questions for me? And he's a little 10-year-old, adorable kid. And he goes, he's like, Dad, well, yeah, I know you're really sick, but you're like this really tough guy from New York City and everything, and you'll be okay with whatever. He said, at least it's not cancer. Yeah. So I said, it is cancer, Jamie. And then, without missing a beat, he goes into this whole thing about, you know, how tough I am. And he goes, you know, there are lots of really smart doctors, great doctors. You know, he says to me the words, he goes, you know, cancer isn't the death sentence that it used to be. And I had already decided that I'm going to die. I hope it's not going to be a miserable death, but I got to do everything I can. I knew I was going to die that day. And literally at that second, I just flipped it. And I was like, he thinks I'm going to be okay. Then I'm going to be okay. You know?
Beautiful.
And the punchline is I bring the skateboarder out, Ryan, for the same conversation. And forget about, like, missing a beat or something. He just, like, he's a skateboarder. He wasn't stoned, I don't think, in those days. He was 9. But he was just like, yeah, you'll be all right. There was no speeches or anything.
Right.
So, you know, because of my kids, you know, the same reason why I felt like I had to be around. I'm like, they believe in me, and so I got to be that guy that they believe in. You know?
It worked.
Yeah,
it worked. Yeah, man.
God bless.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we did. We took. We told my daughter was little. She was like 14, and so we told her and said, you know, what do you want to do? This is going to be ugly, and she said, I want to be in on every major appointment. So she came in and sat.
Treat me like a grown up.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's awesome.
Yeah. Kids will make you better than you are, right?
Yeah,
man.
I aspired. What did I say about the dog? I wish I was the man my dog thinks I am.
Yeah, right. Do you got to get out of here?
Yeah. I was thinking.
Wait, is there anything else I didn't cover?
I do want to mention, I got to give a plug to the band without giving you the list of players exactly, but we are playing Hurricanes May 17th.
Okay.
That's our next gig. We're playing the Barking Frog that Nahida asked me to play. She owns it with her husband on June 20th. And I should mention, if there's anybody out there that's interested, I'm looking for a new executive director to work with me. There was one last question that why am I here today in capitals?
Why are you here today?
So I've been negligent. I haven't been working as hard as I should on Orca since I retired and my back went out. I've been, you know, that guy that's like, yeah, I want to do that, but not today.
Right.
And so we had a guy that was referred to me 8 years ago. That had oral cancer. He had the same cancer as me. He had a swelling on the side of his neck that was the size of an orange when he came in. Mm. He was referred by a patient friend, oncologist, to do like the pre-dental. Before you have treatment, you need to take care of all your dental work. It's a long story or whatever. But so that's why he was there. And everybody in the office fell in love with Declan. He was just an absolute sweet man. And I told the staff, I'm like, Oh, he came back like a week or two later, and that growth had turned into a grapefruit. I shit you not. It was huge. I had never seen anything like that. And I told the staff, I'm like, we're going to be very positive in front of Declan. I'm going to try and be his inspiration. But I was like, don't fall in love with this guy because he's going to die.
Right.
You know, this guy's, he's not going to make it. And good luck with that. So we all fell in love with Declan, and Declan survived. Declan went to Dr. Erkin, had chemo and radiation, and when it was time for surgery, the cancer was gone. The base of the tongue tumor was gone. The neck tumor was gone. And as fast as it had grown, it was so aggressive that reversing it worked that much better. Mm. And that's what Dr. Erkin said to me. I was like, what? How did that happen? And he's like, yeah, with those type of cancers, that's what we often see, that they're easier to treat. P.S., because of the tissue that was removed so quickly from the base of his tongue, he could never swallow really again. So he went from looking at him, I didn't know him really till he came to me when he already had cancer. But he was probably about 230 looking at the picture, a little bigger than me. There's a picture of me and him on a, he and I, whatever, on our website. And he went down to like 130. His life was absolute misery for the last 8 years. So I like to think of myself as a success story, and why am I so lucky to be here and have this, I'm like, I have my life back, I have a wonderful lady in my life, and my kids are doing great, and all that happiness stuff. But Declan would have to say the opposite. And Declan passed away about 2 weeks ago. So that's when I said I have to start working for Orca again, and that's literally the day I reached out to you, and I'm like, John, I'm ready. Let's do this. And if there's anybody out there, we're looking to pay whatever people pay these days for an executive director, but I really need help to get this thing moving again, because when I didn't run Orca, if you will, I was the president and founder, but I always had people that I worked with that did all the heavy lifting,
right.
And you know, I can't type and I can barely talk and whatever.
You're doing a good talking job.
I'm out of gas. But point is, if anybody's looking for Orca, pays our people, not like most charities, and if you don't want to take our money, you can pay it back 10 times that, 10% of it, whatever you want, but I insist on paying the people. If you have any experience with running a charity, if you will, being an event coordinator and so forth, I have a lady, Ramsey Lee is one of my lead singers, and her daughter is willing to, interested in helping us with the media stuff and marketing stuff and all that, but I need somebody in between A and B to do all the stuff that people did. So I'm anxious.
Let's see if we can get somebody.
That would be awesome.
Beautiful.
Should be a win-win-win.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Did I forget anything up?
No.
Say the website again.
That's the number four, Orca, like the whale, ORCA.org, O-R-G.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you came in.
I'm so glad that you got me in.
Yeah, and let this be the beginning of getting Orca back in motion.
And in memory of Declan McGrath, we're going to make it happen and save all kinds of lives. And our mission is just to increase awareness. So, you know, if you work with me, you can never fail at this.
Beautiful.
We're going to do it.
So, all right, man. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope we'll be jamming soon.
Yeah. All right, goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. All good?
Yes.
Beautiful. Yeah,
right. Hopefully you can edit that and make me sound like...
I'm leaving it right. It's perfect the way it is. I don't need to edit you.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.